Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are The Taste of Things, Lover, Stalker, Killer, and The End We Start From.
First film I would like to talk about today is called, at least in America, The Taste of Things. Actually, the original title of it was a bit less inviting than that, perhaps. It was named after the main character of the film. But The Taste of Things does kind of describe what the movie is trying to get at, because this is a movie all about tasting. It is all about cooking. It is all about food in every possible way that you can think of. So it begins with a scene that, as a lot of people have pointed out, goes on for almost 40 minutes where a meal is being prepared and there's no music or anything. There are just people, a couple of people, making a great, big, enormous, elaborate meal in a very large and well-equipped kitchen. However, it's not a modern kitchen because all of this is taking place back in the late 19th century. So we're in the late 1800s here, and we are dealing with that sort of kitchen and with that sort of food, but we are also dealing here with a cook, a chef, I should say, whose name is Dodin, and his wife is Eugénie, and the two of them are lived together and have worked together for many, many, many years. So that's what we're going to be dealing with in this movie, and that is introduced to us at great length at the beginning of the film when we see this meal being prepared. And we find out that these people, both of them, both the chef Dodin and his partner, who is his romantic partner, although they're not married, I'll get to that in a moment, as well as his cooking partner, his chefing partner, if that's a word, which I don't think it is, they are absolutely dedicated. They love their food. They love their cooking. They love everything that they do. Again, the main character is sort of meant to be the chef. Again, the French language title of this movie is La Passion de Dodin Bouffant, because that is his name, the passion of Dodin Bouffant. But Eugénie is, for me at least, in many ways the main character of the film. In any case, they are partners, and they've been doing this for a very long time. And so we meet them, and we get to know them, and we get to see their total dedication to cooking in every way. Then something pretty interesting happens a little bit way into the movie, after we've seen that long meal preparation at the beginning. A guy shows up who is the Prince of Eurasia. Probably not a real person, but that's who he is. That's how he is billed in his life. He shows up and he invites Dodin and Eugénie to an absolutely spectacular meal of his own. And it's really gigantic, and it's long, and it has all these different courses and things like that. And you would think that nothing could be more impressive than this feast, which is set out for Dodin and Eugénie by the Prince of Eurasia. But Dodin thinks it's awful. Dodin says it doesn't have any class. It doesn't have any through line. It doesn't have any solid underpinning. It's just a bunch of sumptuous dishes one after another, and he doesn't like that at all. So what Dodin does is he invites the Prince of Eurasia back to his own place for a meal that he will prepare. And what he does, and this he gets a lot of pushback from his own friends here, he is going to prepare an enormously simple meal, a pot-au-feu. A really, really simple, basic meal where that is the main course and the only course that really matters. And the idea will be to make a pot-au-feu so perfect that it will outdo all of the huge, elaborate, sumptuous stuff that the Prince of Eurasia set forth in his feast that he set out. So this is the sort of thing that goes on in this movie. And we also, of course, have a relationship between Dodin and Eugénie. And we learn after a while that Dodin has been for a long time now asking Eugénie to marry him. And she just has always said no. She just doesn't seem to be the marrying kind. They do sleep together from time to time. We discover that. But no, they're not really married. And so anyway, that's another little sort of through line that goes through the movie itself. All of this is based on a novel from the 1920s, and the novel has been adapted by the filmmaker, who is Tran Anh Hung, a French filmmaker who originally came from Vietnam and emigrated to France as a child. And I've never really been all that excited by Tran Anh Hung's movies, and by the way, I'm not that excited by this one either, but he has a real ability to just get a lot of visual beauty on the screen. So whatever else is the taste of things, is a very beautiful film. It's a very pretty film. I still go back to Tran Anh Hung's first film, The Scent of Green Papaya, which is from 1993. And that was another movie where I felt all it really has going for it is just a lot of gorgeousness. Anyway, I sort of feel that way about The Taste of Things as well. It's a movie that was not all that well received in France, but American critics have just been swooning over it. Everybody seems to love it. Well, I am not what a lot of people call a foodie. I'm just not that interested in food. Maybe that's one reason why I was sort of lukewarm to the movie. I saw the film with somebody else who also didn't think it was all that great. You know, it's a very pretty movie. It's a beautiful movie to watch. It's a pleasant movie to watch, but I just didn't find it very exciting. I will mention that the stars, Benoît Magimel, who plays the main male character, Juliette Binoche, who plays the main female character, 20 years ago and more, they were a couple. And they have a child, but they haven't worked together for a very, very, very long time, and they haven't been a couple for quite a long while either, a couple of decades. So it's sort of fun to see them getting back together and delivering a very nice joint performance here. There's not a whole lot of music in the movie, although near the end is some piano music from the great opera Thaïs by Massenet, and I was very happy to hear that. But overall, look, most people who are listening to me right now will find this movie just gorgeous and beautiful, and they will love looking at all the food, and I'm sure it is one of the great food movies. I'm not a big food person myself. By the way, I'm also a vegetarian. This is definitely not a vegetarian movie. And one scene, probably the most memorable of the movie for me, has some guests coming over and eating ortolans, which are little birds, which you're not allowed to eat in France anymore. And it's considered such a delicacy that you drape a napkin over your head while you're eating it, perhaps to hold in all of the aroma, or perhaps to hide yourself from the sight of God, because this is such a magnificent meal that nobody should really be allowed to eat it. And now in France, you're not allowed to eat it. Anyway, the movie has some odd little things like that, which I really did enjoy. But overall, I think other people are going to enjoy the movie more than I did, and that's fine. It's a very nice movie, a movie that I didn't find exciting at all. Our second movie I would like to talk about today is called Lover, Stalker, Killer. And it's a documentary, and yep, it's about those very unpleasant subjects. So we now move from the very pleasant material of The Taste of Things to the very unpleasant material of Lover, Stalker, Killer. And again, this is a nonfiction film directed by Sam Hopkinson, and it tells a pretty dramatic story. I had a good time watching it. Well, if that's the word, good time, it's pretty harrowing sometimes. But anyway, it's about this guy who breaks up with his wife, and he's an auto mechanic, and he seems like a good, nice, solid guy. And by the way, he remains that throughout the movie. He is a good, nice, solid guy. But he's single for the first time in quite a long while. And he decides he's going to have some fun in life, and he's going to have some romance, and he's going to have some adventure. So he goes on a dating app. And the next thing you know, he has somebody who's very interested in him, and he develops a real relationship with this woman. So that's very nice. Then, however, he has a date with another woman. And they're not together very long. They have a relationship for a couple of weeks. When the woman starts sending him, this new woman, this second dating person, starts sending him weird text messages and threatening emails. And it looks like this second woman is a really, really bad person. And she's threatening him, and then she starts threatening the woman he was with before her, and the threats continue and escalate. And so we start with the lover of the title of the film, and then we move to the stalker. And the guy can't seem to get rid of this. Now, there are some things in the movie that I didn't think were very well explained. For example, you can block people from texting you and from emailing you. And he doesn't seem to be able to do that, although eventually he probably would not actually be able to do that because the person starts texting him from all kinds of different phones, one after another. And then it starts to look like a murder may have occurred. And the police are flummoxed because they don't have a body and they don't have a crime scene, but it really does look like somebody was murdered here. And okay, so my partner figured out what was really going on here, I would say before halfway through, and told me. I wasn't quite that far ahead of the game. So yeah, this is a real life movie, a nonfiction film, a documentary that has the kind of twists that you might find in a reasonably clever fictional stalker movie. But it's not all that hard to figure out if you're really thinking about it. Again, I prefer to just sort of let a movie unfold and be taken by surprise from time to time. In any case, I'm sure a lot of people will be taken by surprise. And I think the story is pretty well told in this movie. That's the appeal of it. Again, it's certainly nasty and unpleasant, and it has death, and it has stalking, and it has all kinds of the threats that we have from our iPhones and our cell phones and things these days, the things that can happen through email and texting. And we have the usual flummoxed police officers who eventually figure out what's going on and so forth. It's all just as a story. Very interesting and in its grim way entertaining to watch. It's apparently doing very well. It's gotten very, very solid reviews from a lot of critics. It's easy to find on Netflix. And if you like true crime documentaries, which a whole lot of people do, Lover, Stalker, Killer is a pretty darn good one. Finally, The End We Start From. This is my favorite of the three movies. And The End We Start From, I'm not saying that I'm quite done yet. That's the title of the movie. Directed by Mahalia Bello, a pretty new filmmaker, adapted from a novel. And oh, I think it's such a good movie. I sometimes say this, but here we are only in February. And I wouldn't be surprised if this ended up on my best of 2024 list when we finally get to the end of the year. So, The End We Start From starts with an image of a bathtub filling up and overfilling. That always causes a little paranoia in me. In my life, I've had that happen, and it's not pleasant. But that's it. And so, yes, we are going to be dealing with a lot of water in this film. The next thing we find out is that we're in England. This is a British film. We find out that rain is falling and falling and falling. Falling, and it just won't stop falling, and flooding is happening, and the country is entering a period of crisis. And our main character, by the way, none of the characters in this movie have names. Everybody is just known as woman or by some letter of the alphabet. The woman we are going to be following through the rest of the film, played by Jodie Comer, is pregnant, very pregnant. She looks like she's about to give birth any moment, and here she is in her house alone, and flooding is happening. So, okay. She makes it to some safety, the baby is born, but the flooding continues, and the whole country goes into a state of crisis. So that gives you the kind of movie this is going to be. It's basically a kind of a post-apocalyptic tale. Or not post-apocalyptic, maybe, but during the actual apocalypse. The flooding and flooding and flooding won't stop. People are fleeing their homes. The highways are jammed. People can't get anywhere. Shelters are opened up, but people can't get to the shelters. Or they get into the shelters, and they're not safe. And here we have this woman now with her newborn infant trying somehow to get to safety for both herself and her tiny little child. And that is what the movie is about. So that sounds really exciting. Wow. And it is an exciting movie in a lot of ways, but it's not told like an action movie. And that is what I love so much about this. It's a kind of an intimate film. It always focuses on our main character, known only as the woman, and her tiny little infant who never really gets a name, and her moving from one place to another, trying to get some safety, trying to get a place where she can be comfortable, trying to get a place where she can be not threatened. And along the way, she meets all kinds of people. And you know what? Most of them are not the kinds of horrifying people that we would run into, for example, in a Mad Max movie. Most of them, not every single one, want to be helpful. They want to give some comfort. They want to maybe share some food. They maybe want to do this. They maybe want to do that. Our main character, the woman, keeps on moving and keeps on looking for a new place. And she meets these people along the way. And sometimes they have suggestions. And sometimes she teams up with somebody else for a while. She teams up, for example, for a while with another woman who knows about a shelter that they can get to, which is a little bit out of the way, and they'll be very safe there. And then they eventually get there, and it's not only a shelter, it's kind of a commune, but things don't 100% work out there. And so our main character keeps on moving, and we wonder whether she will ever find rest. And I guess above all, we wonder whether the rain is ever going to stop and what's going to happen at the end of all of this. One of the minor characters that, and by the way, almost all the characters, except for the woman played by Jodie Comer, are minor or relatively minor characters. But one of the really minor characters we run into along the way is played by Benedict Cumberbatch, a wonderful actor. Don't start thinking you're going to see a Benedict Cumberbatch movie here, because he's only in it for a little while. But he was the one who really got this movie started. He was the one who bought the rights to the story and then developed it, and he appears in it. And of course, he is wonderful, as he always is, except that he's not on the screen for very long. But mainly, we have Jodie Comer on the screen throughout the entire movie, and she is wonderful. And the story is wonderful, and the way the story is told by this fairly new and I think extremely promising director, Mahalia Bello, is just terrific. So if you want to see a really offbeat movie that is full of excitement and adventure, but in a delicate, feminine way, I have to say it that way, then don't miss it. The End We Start From. It's a wonderful movie, and it's a good movie to start your own year from if you haven't been going to the movies much lately. And that is my slightly apocalyptic story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, The Films, The Taste of Things, Lover, Stalker, Killer, and The End We Start From.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.